Welcome back. Now, on this CD, we're going to get into the major themes that pervade everything that we teach throughout all of our programs in the Fast Track to Success. The overarching theme that pervades everything that I teach is the theme of empowerment. Everything I do comes under the umbrella of empowerment. How do you empower people to produce the results that they want to produce in their lives? And empowerment is largely made up of two themes that we'll take a look at here. The first one's called Perception as Projection, and the second theme is Cause and Effect. We'll break each one down individually. So let's start with perception being projection. Carl Jung was a big fan of the concept of perception being projection, which essentially means that you can't see anything outside of you that's not you. According to Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who is a Hungarian biologist who wrote the book Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience, we're constantly being bombarded by over 2 million bits of information every single second of every single day. That's a whole lot of information pouring in via the five senses. But in order to make sense of the overwhelming volume of information coming in, your nervous system deletes, distorts, and generalizes that information, so you're actually only aware of a minute amount of that information every second. So out of 2 million bits coming in, you're only aware of 7 plus or minus 2 chunks of that information. That's about 134 bits. Now my question to you is this: is there a difference between those two numbers, 2 million and 134? There's a huge difference between those two numbers, and that's how much information you're leaving out every single second of every single day. And what's not immediately obvious is that we're conditioned and programmed to leave out the same information each time. I mean, think about it for a second. Isn't it true that there's some people that only notice all of the things that aren't working in their lives or all the things that there are to be depressed about in life? And then there's other people who only notice all the things that there are to be happy about or all the opportunity that exists in the world. Ultimately, the quality of your life comes down to what you're deleting at any given time. Think about it this way. How much information is there on the World Wide Web? There's tons of information on the World Wide Web. Everything that you could possibly want to find exists out there, and it can be found through some search engine. But if you've got the word poverty punched into the search engine, what's going to come up on the screen? Everything that has to do with poverty, and everything else is going to be deleted. Now, if you looked at the computer monitor and you had poverty punched into the search engine and you knew nothing about computers, you may mistake that for being all that there was. And that's how it works in life. People go through their entire lives with certain keywords punched into the search engine of life, and they keep pulling up the same experiences, sometimes with painstaking regularity. Now, it's not that wealth doesn't exist out there. It's just that we've been programmed and conditioned for a certain experience of life. If you were to go on the search engine and punch in the word wealth, what comes up? Everything that has to do with wealth. And in life, it works exactly the same way. What we look for, we find. Quick story. One day about 6 years ago, I was driving down the street and I saw a car that was a make and model that I really liked, but I'd never seen that type of car before. And I said to myself, I'm going to get one of those. And then all of a sudden, I started to see those cars everywhere. Now, my question to you is this. Did the cars exist before I looked for them to exist? Yes or no? Of course they did. They were always out there. I just had to sort for them or look for them before they came into my experience. Now, another quick story. I was in San Jose, California, teaching one of our live Breakthrough to Success weekends. And there was a woman in the audience who approached me on one of the first breaks, and she said, Chris, this information is so powerful. I want to take it out to the school system so we can transform children when they're young. She said, if we could capture them at that age and help them to transform their limiting beliefs and their limiting ways of looking at the world, she said, we could change the whole world. I said, that's fantastic. I said, go do it. She said, the only problem is I don't have the money. I said, don't have the money. I said, there's $13 trillion circulating around the planet every single day looking for somebody to take care of it. It might as well be you. You know, there's a river of money flowing above our heads. All you've got to do is tap your personal pipeline into it and let it flow to you. So with that, she went through the entire program and she destroyed some of her limiting decisions around money and abundance and wealth. And when she went home, about 2 weeks later, she called our offices. And she said that she had really taken what I said to heart. After leaving the program, she had found tens of thousands of dollars in grant money to fund her project. And she mentioned that she had a meeting with the governor of the state in just a couple of weeks. Now, I've got a question for you. Did the money exist before she looked for it to exist? Yes or no? Of course it did. It was always out there. She just had to begin to sort for it in order to bring it into her awareness, bring it into her focus and her experience of life. Another way to look at this is like this. You've got the flashlight of your focus. That's the 7 plus or minus 2 chunks of awareness per second that you've got, about 134 bits once again. And you're living in the dark room of life. And in one corner of this dark room is poverty. In another corner is wealth. In one corner is poor relationships. In another corner is great relationships. In one corner is poor physical health. In the other corner is great physical health. What becomes your experience of the world is where you've got the flashlight of your focus trained. That's what you bring into your awareness. So the good news is that we can change our focus and change our reality, sometimes instantly. The challenging news for most people is that 95% of the drivers that determine where we point the flashlight of our focus are unconscious. So the question becomes, how do we take charge of them? We'll be getting into that next. But realize that where you've got the flashlight of your focus trained is based upon who you are. That's why the world will always be a reflection of your consciousness. Perception is projection. What you see is who you are. The world's like a big mirror reflecting back in your face, and it's a reflection of your consciousness. Carl Jung said that we tend to marry our unconscious mind and project out onto him or her all of our unconscious, unresolved stuff. What that means is that if you keep getting things in relationship that you don't want, that's you. You know, you've heard the saying, wherever you go, there you are. But what that also means in the context of relationships is that once we've cleared up our own internal stuff, and that's a technical term, then we free ourselves up to attract truly phenomenal relationships, because a relationship will always be a reflection of your consciousness. Remember, we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. The world itself changes based upon who or what looks at it. Now, this really bothered Einstein and famous quantum theorists such as Niels Bohr. Niels Bohr said, "Do you mean to tell me that the entire universe changes simply because a mouse looks at it?" But it does. You see, all of reality is subjective, and it's based upon who or what is looking at it. So remember, if you want to make changes outside of you, the place to change is inside yourself. Now, the next theme that we're going to cover that pervades all of our teachings is the theme of cause and effect. And this simply means that one thing causes another. But the question I have for you is, in your life, which side of the cause and effect equation are you on? Are you the cause of those things that happen in your life? Or are you at the effect of things that happen to you? The person on the cause side of the equation says that I cause those things that happen in my life, or I create those things that happen in my life. The person on the effect side of the equation is the person who things happen to, or they're at the effect of the things that happen around them. There was an American president who once said, "I'd rather be the man in the saddle than the man saddled by the events in my life." So it's far superior from an empowerment perspective to be on the cause side of the equation rather than on the effect side of the equation. Now, the person on the effect side of the equation will say things like, "I would have been a success, but..." And then they'll always have reasons or excuses, but they'll never have results. And they'll either point to something outside themselves or even inside themselves over which they have no control. They'll say, "I would have been a success if it wasn't for the IRS that took all my money." Or, "I would have been a success if it wasn't for my ex-wife who took all my money. Or my ex-husband who kept me down and wouldn't let me shine. Or I would have been a success if it wasn't for my learning disability." You see, the reasons or excuses could also be internal things as well. Now, the person on the cause side of the equation says, "Yeah, I choose those things that happen in my life, or I've created them, oftentimes for a grander purpose." Now, by the way, being at cause in life is simply a frame, a way of looking at the world that will support you in being empowered. When you're on the cause side of the equation, you take responsibility for those things that occur inside your life. Now, I have a belief that I create everything that happens in my world. And what doesn't matter is whether that belief is true, right, or real. What does matter is what results do I produce as a result of holding that belief. Remember this, whether there's really a poisonous snake by my foot, or I just believe that there's a poisonous snake by my foot, I react the same. So your beliefs will determine your actions and therefore your results. So I choose to adopt beliefs that empower me rather than disempower me. And the belief that we create everything or we've chosen everything that can occur in our world, perhaps for a grander purpose, can empower you to the max. Now always remember that everything is your responsibility, nothing is your fault. A lot of people get this concept mixed up in their own mind and they use it to beat themselves up with. Like they'll say, well, why did I create this? Why did I create these circumstances? But if you use this frame from that perspective, you're really just being in effect, aren't you? So the more empowering way to use it is not to ask yourself the question, why did I create this? But rather, how did I create it? And what do I want to create instead? Quick story. There was a professional fighter that came to see me, and his presenting problem was that he was about 25 pounds overweight. And he said, Chris, I really need to lean up so that I can get in fighting shape again because he had a big fight coming up. So I asked him the question, what's preventing you or what's stopping you from weighing your ideal weight? And his response was this. He said, you know, Chris, I think it's my wife. I said, really, your wife? Now I've got a question for you. Was he being at cause or effect? Correct answer? Effect, right? I said, really, your wife? He says, well, maybe not my wife, but it's my marriage. Question, cause or effect? Still at the effect, right? He's pointing at something as being the reason or excuse for his lack of results. So I asked him, why would your marriage prevent you from weighing your ideal weight? He said, well, Chris, honestly, he said, the last time that I was lean and trim, girls started flirting with me. And he said, I think I'm holding on to the weight to protect my marriage. Now, I thought that was very noble of him. By the way, he's a dear friend today. But nonetheless, I asked him the question. I said, so girls started flirting with you. He said, uh-huh. I said, let me ask you a question. How did you create that? You see, I wanted to challenge his argument at the point where he was being most at effect. So I asked him, how did he create the girls flirting with him? He said, what? He said, what are you talking about? I don't create that. You don't create people flirting with you. I said, really? I said, I have a belief that we create everything that happens in our experience, either through our actions or through our non-actions. So, how did you create it? And he stopped for a second, then his shoulder slumped down. He said, oh my God, I guess I did create it. Dropped his head, you know, and I said, no, wait a second. I said, everything's your responsibility, nothing's your fault. I said, this isn't about beating yourself up. It's about asking yourself the question, how did I create it? And what do I want to create instead? And what he got was that he needed to keep energetic integrity within the context of his relationship. Like this guy had more energetic leaks than the Titanic. And once he got that straight, once he understood that, we took out his reasons or excuses and left him with results. And the story has a happy ending. He wrote me an email and he shed the 25 pounds easily and effortlessly after getting rid of his reasons or excuses that kept him boxed into the old problem. Now, oftentimes people take me to task when I talk about this concept of being at cause. And I challenge people to the extreme. See, when you play this game, you want to play full out. So let me give you a story that will really take this concept and stretch your mind to the extreme with it. This story comes from the book Little Soul in the Sun by Neil Donald Walsh. And if you haven't read it, I'd go out and buy it tonight and buy it for all of the children that you know because it's a children's parable that really makes a valuable point. So in this book, there's a little soul that one day goes to God. And the little soul says, God, guess what? I know who I really am. And God says, well, that's very good. Who are you? Little soul says, I'm the light. And God says, that's right, very good, you are the light. Then the little soul stops and thinks about it for a second and says, but you know what? I want to experience myself as something. I really want to experience myself as something. And God says, but you're you. What do you want to experience yourself as? And the little soul thought about it and then said, I got it. I want to experience myself as forgiveness. Yeah, that would be really cool. I'd like to know myself as forgiveness. And God said, but all is perfect. There's nothing to forgive. So the little soul got a bit bummed out and kind of dropped his shoulders, dropped his head. And he's like, gosh darn it. And just then, a friendly soul came up. And the friendly soul said, hey, I'll help you. The little soul said, you will? How? And the friendly soul says, well, we can go down to earth. We can become incarnate. And I'll do something horrible to you. I'll do something terrible. I'll do something so bad. And then you can forgive me. And you can know yourself as forgiveness. And the little soul said, you do that for me? You know, you perfect being of light, you can move from cloud to cloud at the speed of thought. How's it possible that you would lower your vibration so much that you could do this horrible, awful thing? And the friendly soul said, well, I do it because I love you. But there's only one thing you've got to promise me, one caveat. Little soul said, anything. I will do anything you ask. And the friendly soul said, at the moment I strike you down, at the moment I do that horrible, awful thing, please promise me that you'll remember who I really am. Because if you don't, we'll be doomed to repeat the cycle over and over again until we get the learnings that we need to get, or until another soul comes down to show us the way out. Now, I think that this story speaks beautifully to the possibility that at some level, we may have chosen everything that could possibly happen in our experience, perhaps for a grander purpose. Because there's a lot of people that go through life and they have harsh circumstances, perhaps in their youth. And they say, I can't be successful because this happened or because that happened. And I'm here to say that perhaps even those types of circumstances were circumstances that we chose, perhaps for a grander purpose at some level. Now people say, why would you believe this, Chris? Well, what this does is it automates the process of gaining resolution on memories and events in our life in such a way that they drive us forward. Because here's the deal. We could either allow the events in our life to spiral us downward to greater depths of despair or to spiral us upward to greater heights of achievement. This is about becoming a master of life, becoming a master of utilization. Now, the term utilization is not one that I created myself. I actually borrowed this from Dr. Milton Erickson, and he would use it in the context of hypnosis. So in the old days when people would do hypnosis with somebody, if something happened when the client was in a trance, like let's say a door opened or something, the hypnotist in their mind would think, oh crap, the person's going to come out of trance. Not Erickson. A door opens up, he would utilize that. He'd say to the client, new doorways of understanding are opening for you now. And the client in their mind would go, wow, that sounded like a real door. You see, Erickson would take whatever was occurring in the natural environment and utilize it for his advantage. And what I'm suggesting is that you can do the same thing in your life. That's the master of life, the master of utilization. Now, I've been a martial artist all my life. And in hard style martial arts, you know, they'll throw punches and you'll block the punches and it's basically force on force. Whereas in a softer art like jiu-jitsu or aikido, what happens is the martial artist will utilize the force of the blow and redirect the energy. This is the master. And in life, we can do the same thing. It's kind of like when life gives you lemons, you make a margarita, right? So we need to take that type of attitude with our life. And it's only then that we become a massive learning machine. And we learn to take all of our adversity in life and allow that adversity to serve a grander purpose and to drive us forward to new hopes and new dreams. So, enough said. When we move to the cause side of the equation, we're empowered. So I'd like to suggest that in your own mind, you make the commitment to yourself right here, right now, to be at cause from this moment forward. All right, now let's talk about focus. I've mentioned focus several times already throughout this program, but we need to learn how to really take charge of our focus because it's so vital in terms of what appears in our world. In fact, William James, the father of American psychology, once said, "Your focus is everything. It determines what appears inside your world. If only there were a way to teach it," he continued, "that would be an education extraordinaire. But unfortunately, it seems too complex a topic." Well, times have changed because that's what we teach in our Breakthrough to Success and our Fast Track programs. So let's talk about focus. And this piece of the training comes from our result certification training. Now, I want you to consider a concept as we move forward. And that concept is this. You can't think about what you don't want to think about without thinking about it. Think about that for a second, right? You can't think about what you don't want to think about without thinking about it. Think about that. So, for example, if I say to you, don't think of a blue tree, what do you think of? A blue tree. Now, I know you may be thinking, no, Chris, I didn't think of a blue tree. I thought of swimming with a dolphin in Hawaii. Come on. That may be so, but at best, it's a two-step process. In order to even make sense of the sentence, you had to first think about the tree and then think of something else, because the unconscious mind does not process negatives directly. Now, this becomes vitally important in terms of learning how to directionalize your focus, because think about it for a second. Why is it that sometimes people will go in on the sales call and they think, gee, I hope I don't blow this sale like I did the last one? What are they really focused on? Blowing the sale. What are they just as likely to do? Blow the sale, right? Think about it for a second. Why is it that sometimes the performer will go out for a performance and they think, gee, I hope I don't get nervous? Where's their focus really? Is it on landing that audition or landing that performance and nailing it? Or is it on not blowing it or on getting nervous? You see, our focus is so precious. We have 7 ± 2 chunks of focus or chunks of awareness per second. And the question is, what are you doing with it? Are you focusing on what you want or on what you don't want? So what happens when the person who wants to create a great relationship is thinking, gee, I hope he doesn't leave me? What are they really focused on? Our focus determines our results. What's the dieter focused on? Usually food, all the things they can't eat, right? It's like, gee, I'd sure love to have some of that chocolate cake, but I can't because I'm on a diet, right? What we focus on determines our results. So we need to learn to take charge of our focus. And the first thing to understand is that you can't think about what you don't want to think about without thinking about it. So you've got to become like the laser with your focus. And we want to focus on what we want to the exclusion of everything else. That's where we gain power in focus. Now, it's also important to understand the components of focus. Your focus is made up of just a few things: pictures, sounds, feelings, tastes, smells, and self-talk. Those are your senses. That's all you've got, right? So you've got the 5 senses and your self-talk. That's the visual, auditory, kinesthetic, olfactory, gustatory, and the auditory digital or the self-talk. So those are all the components of your focus. Now, there's a lot of people out there in various disciplines that say things like, well, I visualize my success and therefore I'll be successful. Well, that's great if you've got the other components in alignment too, because you could be making pictures of the best circumstances. But what if you've got feelings of poverty or lack or anger or fear? Are those components of focus? Do they directionalize your focus as well? You better believe it, right? What about the self-talk? I mean, a lot of people say, well, I talk positively to myself. And we've read all the books on positive thinking, right? People say, I give myself positive affirmation. Fantastic. But you could be talking positively to yourself, yet making pictures of the worst possible circumstances, or having feelings, once again, of fear or poverty or lack or anything like that. And those are major components of focus. So we need to learn how to take charge of all of these things in order to drive our focus in the way that really produces a phenomenal result. When you become a master of focus, you become a master of life. I mean, think about it. If you look at excellent and exquisite performers in every context of life, whether it be a Tiger Woods at golf or whether it be a Robert De Niro in the world of acting, these are people that are masters of focus. Warren Buffett in the financial world, masters of focus. Do you think that Tiger Woods, when he hits the ball, is thinking, gee, I hope I don't hit it in the rough? Or is he thinking of sinking that ball right on? What about Robert De Niro when he goes in to play a role? Is he thinking, gee, I hope they don't judge me? Or is he thinking of being right there in character? Right? It's all about learning to channel your focus, no matter what your discipline, no matter what playing field you're looking to excel on. Now, some people say, wait a second, Chris. Pictures, sounds, feelings, tastes, smells, and self-talk. That's a whole lot of stuff going on inside, and I had no clue all this stuff was happening. Because see, here's the thing. A lot of this stuff is unconscious. In fact, all of it is, until we bring it into our conscious awareness. But the question is, who's driving the bus? I had a woman that came to me one time and she said, Chris, I'm depressed. Now, depression requires adequate planning. You see, most people think it's something that just happens to them or something that just occurs. But my question to her was, well, how do you do that? And she said, what? What are you talking about? How do I do that? I don't do depression. It happens to me. I said, really? Can you remember a specific time when you were doing it? She said, sure. And I said, you're pretty good at this, aren't you? And she said, I'm great at this, as if she were proud. So I said, all right, think of that time when you were doing depression. She said, okay, and she got real serious. I said, now rewind the movie a little bit to before you were doing it. I said, because there was a point before you did it, right? And she said, well, yeah, I guess so. And I said, okay, rewind the movie to before. And she said, okay. And she's got this big smile on her face. Pretty good at controlling this. So she's got this big smile on her face. And I said, so you're walking around, all is fine. I said, and then what? She said, and then I see my husband and he's ignoring me. I said, all right, so you see your husband and do you say to yourself he's ignoring me? Do you make a picture in your mind? Do you get a feeling? She said, no, I just see him and I know he's ignoring me. I said, all right, so what happens next? She said, well, then I say to myself, he doesn't love me. I said, all right. Then what do? Do you make a picture? Do you say something? Do you get a feeling in your body? She said, well, then I make a picture of him leaving me. I said, all right. And then what next? Do you say something to yourself? Do you get a feeling in your body? She said, then I get this turning in my gut. I said, well, geez, I said, if I did that, I'd be depressed too. You see, we have recipes that we run in our minds and bodies of these pictures, sounds, feelings, tastes, smells, and self-talk. It's an order and sequence of things that we do that produces a result. This is called strategies, and we cover that topic more in our results certification. So if you want to find out more about that, you can. But for right now, what I want you to do is just to begin to become aware of all the things that you do inside your mind and body, because we need to learn how to control these things and direct them in the way that we want, to focus on what we want to the exclusion of everything else. And people say, but Chris, how do I become aware of these things? How do I take charge of these things? And I always tell people what it takes is just a little bit of curiosity. Maybe not even a little bit. Maybe it takes ferocious curiosity. I'll give you an example. Like, I was always the type of kid when I was growing up that had a ferocious curiosity about certain things. Like, I used to have one of those Stretch Armstrong dolls. I don't know if you remember those, but those are the dolls that you could, like, stretch their arms real far. And I just had to know what was inside. So I remember one day taking some scissors and cutting them open just to see what was inside. And it was this gelatinous goop. And it tasted pretty good, too. I guess I was a little weird, too. I actually ate the stuff inside. But in any case, I had this ferocious curiosity, always getting into things. Like, here's a classic example. I fly all the time. I'm always on an airplane going from one state to the next. And just recently, I was on a very small private plane with just one other passenger. And so there we are, and we're about to take off for where we really wanted to arrive. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but have you ever noticed that people always bring their baggage with them on a flight? I guess it's just my ferocious curiosity that causes me to wonder about things like this. Well, you know what I'm talking about. They're carry-on baggage. It's like this is the baggage that's so dear to you that you never know when, you never know why, but you might need to get into your baggage. You know what I'm talking about, right? But you know what's interesting? You never see them carry it on their lap during the flight, do you? It's against FAA regulations. So they come over the sound system and they say things like, attention, ladies and gentlemen, please kindly take your baggage and store it in the overhead bins or under the seat in front of you, because we can't take off until you put your baggage away. You can get into it later if you need to, but we can't take off until you put your baggage away. So just put it away. Put your baggage away. Put it away. And then people do. But I guess that's just me. It's just because I'm so curious, you know? To give you an idea of the real ferocious curiosity I've always had, you may need to go back a bit. You see, for me, I grew up in Lake Tahoe, Nevada. Now, I don't know if you grew up near snow in the winter, but for me, snow was the most magical, wondrous thing up until a certain age. It's right around the age of 8 or 9. We call it snow shoveling age. So whenever the snow was on the ground, snow shoveling age, the snow kind of lost some of its magic. But pre-snow shoveling age, before the age of 8 or 9, whenever the snow was on the ground, that meant one thing, that Christmas was around the corner. And whenever Christmas was around the corner, that meant one thing. Presents! So pre-snow shoveling age, before the age of 8 or 9, my parents would have to go outside to shovel the snow. So when they'd be outside shoveling the snow, they'd leave me in the house alone. I'm in the house alone. Christmas is around the corner. So I'm in the house. Presents are in the house. What's my job? I gotta find the presents. Now, it was really easy to do, too, because my parents were so well organized that they always hid the presents in the same place. They always hid the presents in the upper left-hand corner of the closet, for me. My brother was left-handed, so they put his in the upper right-hand corner. I don't know why. But anyway, what's the first thing you do when you get a present? You gotta shake it, right? Because let's face it, if the shake sucks, it's clothes. Right? We like the cool shakes. The kind where you turn it over and it goes like slide, thud, slide, thud. Or where you turn it over and you can hear the pieces rattling through. You know, that's the kind of present where my curiosity would just go nuts. It'd be like I could hear the Mission Impossible theme song go off in my head. It'd be like, doo, 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 doo. So in any case, I get the present right there in front. And I knew that I needed to get inside the present. Because let's face it, as beautiful as the present is on the outside, it's just a facade, isn't it? The true gift is on the inside, below the surface. So I'd carefully take the tape and begin to peel it away. But it's like the tape had been on there so long. It's like the glue had begun to melt into the fibers of the paper. But I was like a little MacGyver. I could get into anything. You know MacGyver. So I would take a teapot. And I'd get the steam coming up and get the steam rising up and I'd slowly begin to steam that tape open. And you know what? The moment I'd open up the present and look inside the present, that's when I'd know what was about to happen in the future. And you see, that's the same kind of curiosity that Milton had. Milton Erickson. In fact, there was a story about Erickson when he was younger and he had this ferocious curiosity that drove him to a featherbed company. I think it was called like the Deep Down Featherbed Company. And he was always curious about what made the featherbed so soft. And so one day he decided to go inside deep down and find out what was going on inside. And so when he walked inside the door and stepped across the threshold, the light seemed to change inside. And he said to himself, there's something to learn here. There's something to learn here. And so he walked up to the person who ran the place. And he said, I'd just like to spend some time in this place. And learn things unconsciously. Now, I guess things were different then because the person who ran the place was happy to have Milton stay there. So Milton sat back and he began to drift and he began to dream. Learning things inside deep down. And in this dream, he heard a voice that said, I'm curious. Do you feel differently now than you felt a moment ago? Hello? Talking to you, if you're listening. So that's what it might have felt like to hang out with Milton Erickson for a while. So if by chance you were taking notes and your pen slid off the paper, you're probably doing just fine. But in any case, what I'd like to suggest is that you can develop a ferocious curiosity for what's happening inside. And you can begin to pay attention to the pictures, the sounds, the feelings, the tastes, the smells, and the self-talk. And you get them totally toward what you want to the exclusion of everything else. This is where we begin to master our mind and master the results that we produce in life. So now that we've talked so much about focus, it's time to begin to apply these concepts. What I'd like you to do at this point is pick an area of your life where you feel that you're not living up to your full potential, and this will be the area of your life that you're focusing on throughout the audio series. Now, I know some people go, I want all areas of my life. But here's the deal. This is not the last time you'll ever do personal development work. This is like a new beginning. So as you start this, go into it with a mindset of wouldn't it be great if you had a major breakthrough in a singular area of your life? Then you can always apply the concepts in other areas of your life and continue your education. I hope you do that for the rest of your life. I know I certainly will be. So right now, choose whether you're going to focus on relationships, health, or your career. And most people will lump career and finances into the same category. So please turn to the page in your manual with a triangle on it with the three areas of life, relationships, career, and health. Now, certainly there's more areas of life than just these three, but these are the three that I'm going to have you choose between as you first go through this program. So right now, be bold, be brave, and circle the area of life that you're going to focus on, either career, relationships, or health. Circle the area now. And if you don't know which one you want to focus on, then just ask your unconscious mind, dear unconscious mind, if I were to have a breakthrough in one of these areas, which would have the most pervasive impact on all the others? Then circle it. Now, some people ask me the question, does that mean I can't focus on the others? No, it doesn't mean that at all. All it means is that we're going to focus on it for this breakthrough experience. You can always go back and readdress the other areas at other times. So pick your area and get ready, because the transformation is about to begin. Once you've chosen the area of life that you're going to focus on, then you can pop in the next CD. And until then, always remember, if a thing is humanly possible, consider it to be within your reach.